Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 32. I'm recording it on Saturday, October 25th, 2008. The PE10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Stocks today are priced at fair value, which means that stocks purchased today offer a strong long-term value proposition. It may be that if you purchase stocks today, you're going to have to live through 5 or 6 or 7 years of hell before you start to see a positive return. But the probabilities are strongly in your favor that after 10 years or so, you're going to see a strong return from stocks purchased today. That's the opposite of the situation that has applied since 1995 until through the first part of 2008. From 1995 through the first part of 2008, the odds were strong that the long-term, from 1995 through the first part of 2008, stocks offered a poor long-term value proposition. So stocks purchased at that time were likely to give poor results if you held them long enough. The short term is unknowable. They might have provided good returns in the short term, and they did from 1995 through 1999. But the long-term value proposition was poor. We knew that at those insane price levels, we had a huge price crash coming up ahead, and any short-term gains would be wiped out in the price crash. We're now in the opposite situation where a lot of people are talking about further price drops over the next 5, 6, 7 years, and they may be right or they may be wrong. We don't know any more than we knew before what's going to happen in the short term. But what we know today is that while the long-term value proposition was poor when stocks were at insanely high price levels, the long-term value proposition today is strong because today stocks are priced at fair value. Stocks are priced at reasonable price levels. So the situation is the reverse. We had euphoria in the stock market before, but the long-term value proposition was poor. Today we have fear and panic in the market today, but the long-term value proposition is strong. So we flipped. The title of this podcast is The Good Kind of Capitulation. No Depression Required. I was looking at some comments on a discussion board this morning. Stocks went down a little bit again yesterday. And people were saying, when's this going to end? When is this pain going to come to an end? And if you know anything about the rational investing model that I advocate at the website, you know that I don't believe it's possible to say when it's going to end. What I believe is there's all sorts of scenarios, and if I went through them all, that would take the entire podcast. But what I believe is likely to happen is that we're going to be in the pain is going to continue for some time, but not necessarily in a relentless sort of way. I think that people are thinking about this in black and white terms. They're thinking either we're going to continue to go down in price, which is what they view as pain, or the pain's going to end and we're going to start going up in price. We're going to return to the valuation levels we were at for, you know, from 95 through the first part of 2008. I think it's more likely that we'll see neither of those two scenarios. I don't think we're going to continue going down indefinitely, and I don't think we're going to go back up to where we were a year ago. I think we may see some upward movement, enough to relieve people, enough to make people feel that the pain has passed. and then we will have another hard drop. And or it could be. I think the best of all scenarios is that we would stabilize at this PE10 level, 15 or 16, something like that. That would be wonderful if we could stabilize, because that would mean we could have years of good returns. If we stay at that same PE10 level, stocks would be earning a real return each year of about 6%. So that would be very positive. But I certainly think that's a possible scenario. But I don't, emotionally, you don't get the sense that we're ready for that quite yet. There are people who are more open. There's no question there's been a change with this huge price drop. There are the people who are dogmatic passive investors have been a little bit shaken up. They haven't given up passive investing. I don't see that. But even the dogmatics are a little bit shaken up. They're a little more open. If you go to the boards that have banned honest posting, they don't jump on people quite as soon as they used to. They don't have open arms. They don't say, "Hey, we know we were wrong. Look, you know, our strategies have been a failure. They've destroyed, you know, they've caused so much human misery. Let's let in some of those people who understand the realities better than we do, and let's hear what they have to say. Let's give the other side a chance to speak. Maybe we all can learn together." You're not hearing that message by any stretch of the imagination. And that's, of course, the message I would like for us to hear. But you're not hearing, when somebody puts forward an honest, sincere statement that is against the passive investing, the passive / emotional investing philosophy, they don't get condemned quite as quickly as they used to. And they don't get condemned quite as harshly as they used to. Even the dogmatics have been a little shaken up. The non-dogmatics have always been open, which is the majority of all board communities that I've been at. The usual breakdown is that there's usually about 10% of the board population that understands the realities, that valuations affect long-term returns, and they understand the implications of that in at least some depth. And there's usually about 20% intense dogmatics who can't tolerate the idea of anyone anywhere speaking about what the historical data says, about how stocks have always performed in the past. That just drives them insane. And then there's usually 70% in the middle, and that 70% is open to the idea of hearing honest posting. They like the idea of hearing different viewpoints and talking things over and asking questions. But they lean toward the passive investing model because they've heard the experts endorse it, and they figure that all of these experts couldn't possibly be wrong. There must be something to what they're saying. So they lean in that direction, and they hate abusive posting. And if abusive posting it continues long enough and the site administrators don't do anything about it, this group in the middle will come to favor a ban on honest posting just to get the goons to be quiet. That's the normal dynamic. Today, the 10% that understands the realities is a little more outspoken. The 20% dogmatics are a little bit shaken up, a little bit unsure of themselves, and still defensive, but a little less intense, a little less dogmatic. And the 70% is alarmed. The 70% is alarmed. The 70% is concerned. These things aren't working. You told us all these magic formulas. You said, if we just say the words, timing doesn't work, all the old realities would be turned on their heads. And that's not working. Why isn't it working? You told us if we set stocks for the long run that valuations wouldn't matter anymore. But it doesn't seem to be so. When will this stop? When can we go back to the summer of 1999? This is the thought on a lot of people's minds. You know, we're not going to go back to the summer of 1999 for some time. We've got a lot of different roads to go down, and some of them dark roads and some of them sunny roads. We have the power to choose the sunny roads over the dark roads or the dark roads over the sunny roads. No, you know, when people say when's it going to change? I feel like they're looking for some daddy figure, you know, or some god figure to come out of the sky and say, all right, there's been enough suffering, today it ends. And there is no, I don't believe there is a god figure or a daddy figure that's going to come out of the sky. We will decide. We will decide when the pain stops. The purpose of this podcast is to explain how that works. How is it that at one and the same time, we very much want the pain to stop, and we're asking that the pain stop, and yet we have the power to make the pain stop, and we don't act on it. We don't employ that power. That's a paradox. That's what this podcast is all about. I think probably a good place to start is to look at that PE10 level that I talked about at the very beginning. The PE10 level today is 15. That's fair value. So I mentioned that everything has been flipped. Everything has been flipped from what's applied for the past 13 years. For the past 13 years, all we were hearing is stocks are good, stocks are good, stocks are good. The reality is they were bad. Today, we're hearing stocks are bad, stocks are bad, stocks are bad. The reality is stocks are good. So everything's been flipped. We had something else that's been flipped, is that the market had set an insane price from 1995 through the first part of 2008. Today, the market has set a good price. PE10 of 15 is fair value. Stocks are priced reasonably today, and stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition when they're priced reasonably. So I've been saying, you know, for years now, that the economic realities, that the market has to ultimately reflect the economic realities, and the economic realities were going to lead to a price crash. That's not true today. That's gone. That worry is gone. I wish we could let that in. I wish we could let that in, because if we could let that in, this pessimism, this doom and gloom would dissipate. We could celebrate the fact that we've got stocks back. When you know, I'm a Bob Dylan fan, and you know, his most reviled album was the Self-Portrait album. I think it came out 1969, and people, maybe it was early 1970, and people hated this album. The critics hated the album, and I think most listeners hated it as well. And you know, then he put out 4 months later, he put out the New Morning album, and there was a critic, Gleason was his name. I can't remember his first name, but he was originally a jazz critic, I believe, but then he wrote a little bit about rock, about Dylan. And he headlined, you know, his review of the New Morning album, "We've got Dylan back." You know? Well, we've got stocks back. When stocks went to the prices they went to in 1995, they could no longer provide the sort of returns we need to finance our retirements. We hurt ourselves very, very seriously in that bull market of the 1990s. We did great damage to our hopes of achieving financial freedom in time to retire. But we fixed that. I mean, we didn't fix it in the most graceful way. We didn't fix it in maybe the way we should have. But the job is done. We've got stocks back. That's good. And of course, I don't mean to diminish in any way the pain that people are feeling. I of course understand the pain is serious. Passive investing has led to the greatest loss of middle class wealth in the history of the United States. Great. There's no idea in the history of personal finance that has caused such human misery as this idea that it's okay or acceptable or, heaven help us all, a good thing to leave your stock allocation at the same level when prices go to insane levels. So there's pain. There's pain. The pain is real. But there's also good news that comes with it. And we we need to let that good news in. We need to understand how the good news and the bad news works together to create an overall reality. So when I say we are at fair value, one of the questions we're always talking about on these podcasts and in articles at the site is the efficient market theory. The efficient market theory is the intellectual framework for the passive investing model. The efficient market theory says that the market always prices things more or less properly. You can't outsmart the market. The market knows more than you do. So prices are generally what they should be. I, of course, think that is pure 100% nonsense. Now, if I say that we're at fair value, aren't I saying that the market today is pricing stocks properly? You can answer that question yes or no, depending on exactly what you're asking. Yes, the price of stocks today is proper. Stocks are priced at fair value. You're getting a strong value proposition when you buy stocks today. But it's not because there's an efficient market. What's happening today is that we're coming up with the right number, but through a totally inefficient process. What's going on today is that you have some people, many people, millions, who are still overpricing stocks in their head. These are the passive investing enthusiasts. These people are saying, they're not saying P10 level of 15, today's prices are the right price. They're saying the price that applied 3 months ago is the right price. These are the people saying, a lot of people are saying this. They're saying, well, buy now. You're getting the bargain of the century. Well, I'm saying there's a sense I'm saying buy now. I'm saying the value proposition is good, but I'm not saying this is the bargain of the century. We're just at fair value. There's no bargain. Stocks today are fairly priced. So when people say it's the bargain of the century, you know, load up the truck, what they're really saying is they think today's price is low, not fair. They think it's low. They think the price 3 months ago was fair. That's the passive investor's belief, the emotional investor's belief. The rational investor says we're at fair value. There's another kind of investor, and that's also an emotional investor. It's also a passive investor, but it's the flip side of the ones who exaggerate the price, what the price should be, overstate what the price should be. There's a group today that is feeling panic, that is saying, this is never going to end. Stocks are going to go to zero. Stocks aren't worth what they're selling for today. That's just the flip side of the argument that it's the greatest bargain of the century. Both of those arguments are emotional arguments. So what we have today is two emotional arguments competing against each other in the market, producing a price that is rational. The bottom line is good, but the process by which we're getting there is bad. Now, the question is, when is this pain going to end? When are prices going to stop falling? And when I say stop falling, I don't mean for a month or 2 months or 3 months. I mean in a long-term sense. When are we going to get stocks back like we got Dylan back? When are we going to be able to invest in stocks and be reasonably confident that stocks can help us fund our retirements? And what some people bring up, I saw somebody bring this up. They said, well, it's gotten so bad. One person said, well, it's gotten so bad that it's headed on the way up now. You know, the worst, all the bad news has been reflected. It's all been flushed out, and now it's going to head up. And someone else said, well, no, prices are still so volatile. There's so many trades every day. What we really need is capitulation. Capitulation is when people are so fed up, stocks have been performing poorly for so many years, that people aren't even agitated anymore. They're not even debating anymore. Is the pain ever going to end? When you get to what's called capitulation, people just walk away. They say, their attitude is, I'll never invest in stocks again for as long as I live. And if I have a second life, I'll never invest in my second life, because they've suffered so much pain. But when you get to capitulation, they don't even say that. They don't sort of wrathfully say, I'll never invest in stocks again. They just walk away. They've been hurt so bad that they don't even voice the words. It's beyond vocalization. Things have reached a point where you don't talk about it. You just walk away. It's over. The building has been burned to the ground. That's capitulation. So someone was saying, well, we need to get to capitulation, and we're not there yet. Now, I think there is some... See, the problem with all these questions, I want to say as a preface, is that there's very little in the literature on the emotional side of investing. Everyone acknowledges that human emotions affect stock prices. No one disagrees. But go to the literature and look for analysis of how it does this. And there is some material, but it's probably 10% of the material on investing. It's just a little subset. When I think emotion is 70% of the ballgame, if you don't understand the emotional side of stock investing, you don't understand stock investing. I mean no personal insult in saying so. I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to help you learn. And I'm saying to you, you cannot do the job unless you understand the basics. And the fact that valuations affect long-term returns is the ABCs. And valuations are just emotions. When stocks are overvalued, it's because of investor emotion. So 90% of what you read on investing ignores the fundamental realities. And therefore, 90% of what you read is wrong. This came up just the other day. I've been engaged in some correspondence with Michael Kitsis, and you know, I've published that on the blog. You can read that. And I was posting at the Goon Central Board, and one of the goons made a point, which was a reasonable point. He said, Rob is suggesting to Michael that Michael invite him to speak at a conference on safe withdrawal rates. And I did indeed do that. I think that would be a wonderful opportunity to share what the retire early and indexing communities have learned about safe withdrawal rates over the past 6 years. So I would be thrilled to have that opportunity. So I did suggest that to Michael. But he says, oh, this is typical Rob. He asked to be invited, but then when he says he wants to speak to these experts, and he puts the word experts in quotes, which is an insult. Well, I do put the word experts in quotes all the time. You know, I don't do it every single time I use the word, but frequently. I want to suggest to people that there is no such thing as an investing expert today. The title of the last podcast was, Today's Understanding of How Investing Works is Primitive. When the understanding is primitive, there's no such thing as an expert. 90% today follow some form of the passive investing model. They ignore the effect of valuations on long-term returns. And the other 10%, that, you know, I'm in the other 10%, but even the other 10%, we're not really experts, because you know, I like to think that I know a little more than the people endorsing passive investing, to be sure. I think I'm ahead of them. But I don't get the feedback that I need from the 90% to have my work questioned and challenged to the extent it should be. And neither do the others in the 10%. Robert Shiller and John Walter Russell and Cliff Asness and Rob Arnott and on and on. Those people need to be part of a community, including the 90% that today follows some version of the passive / emotional philosophy of investing. So there are no experts. So when I talk about something like capitulation, I'm going to give I'm going to give, you know, I give my best shot at giving a good answer to the question. But I always like to say up front, please don't take anything I say as gospel. I'm some guy who posts stuff on the internet. I'm not even all that interested in investing. You know, that may seem like a strange thing to say when you look at my website and you say I have 32 podcasts and they all run roughly an hour. But I'm not all that interested in the subject. But circumstances forced me to address the subject, and I discovered that the state of knowledge is primitive, and I felt this is an area where I can do some good, and I am very interested in the subject of financial freedom, early retirement. And people need good information on investing to pull that off. So in an indirect sense, I'm interested. And once you get into it, it does become a lot more interesting than you would think, than what I thought 6 years ago. So I've developed an interest. I have an intellectual interest. And the whole story just amazes me. It's the most amazing story I've ever come across. So in that way, I'm interested. But, you know, in an isolated sort of way, if you said, Rob, you know, Hal, would I have ever chosen to write a book on investing back in 2002? No way, no how. Was not on my agenda. But today, I work on that. That's what I spend all my time doing. Not just working on the book, but developing the ideas that will be presented in the book when it is written, when it is completed. So, if I look at a question like capitulation, I'm giving my best shot, but a lot of times I give what I think are paradoxical answers. And that's just because the state of knowledge is so poor that terms like this haven't even really been defined. They're out there. There's sort of this vague understanding that valuations matter, that emotions matter, that investing is done by humans, that the market is not really efficient, that the pain only ends with capitulation. These ideas are out there. Fear and greed have an influence. You know, these things are out there. But no one ever ties them down. No one ever puts the puzzle together and makes sense out of it. And I've tried to discuss the reasons why I think that is so in other podcasts, so I won't go into that again. But that's the background here. So when we say capitulation, a question that to me is so obvious, people should be asking it. Somebody says, well, we can't turn this around until we have capitulation. Why? Why? Why is that so? What is this? What is the magic of capitulation? You know, isn't that a good question? Doesn't it seem strange to you that people are saying we can't end the price drop or we can't end the pain? We can't get stocks back until we have capitulation. This period where people just give up. Why? Why is it so important that people give up? I think we should be talking about that. That's my message. Over and over and over again, I beat it like a drum. The only way we're going to figure out the answers to questions like that, these huge puzzles, is to talk about them. And we need everyone participating. I can't just be talking with John Walter Russell and Robert Shiller and Rob Arnott and Cliff Asness. I also need to be talking with John Bogle and William Bernstein and Scott Burns and Michael Kitsis and Jonathan Clements. Because all these people have intelligence and all these people have experience and all these people have different perspectives. And only when they're all contributing together will we come up with good, solid answers that we can, in which we can have confidence going forward. So I'll give you my take. And my take is, yes, we do need to see capitulation to end the pain. But I don't think it has to be the form of capitulation most people are talking about, which is a horrible form of capitulation. What most people are talking about when they use that word is everybody giving up on stocks. That would mean people were so depressed they weren't even willing to make arguments anymore. They just walk away in disgust. Sell all their stocks, vow never again to own stocks, and walk away in disgust. And if we see that, what we will be seeing is a drop in PE10 down to somewhere around 7 or 8, which is where we started the insane bull market in 1982. If that would be a 50% drop from today's price. That's why you have people out there saying we're going to go to Dow 4,000. We don't have to go to Dow 4,000. We do not. It's up to us. We don't have to drop at all from today's prices. We are today at perfectly reasonable prices. There is no reason why we should have to see any further drops in stock prices. Do I think we're going to see further drops? My personal guess is that we are. Not necessarily right away, but I think over time. But I certainly don't think it's necessary, and I certainly don't want to see it. I don't think it serves any constructive purpose. We have that power. Humans control stock prices. And I think it comes down to information. If we inform ourselves about the basics, the ABCs of how stocks work, we will begin making better decisions, better informed decisions. We will have more confidence in those decisions because they are better informed. And we will see the valuation level stabilize, which would mean we would begin to see annual returns of somewhere around 6% real, perhaps a little better than that. And I think that would be just fine. I think that would be just great. But we've got to get there first. We're not there today, clearly. We're not there today when you still have people on discussion boards defending the passive investing model, and you still have people attacking those who discuss in realistic ways what the historical data teaches us. Perhaps not as vehemently as they were attacked 12 months ago, but you still do see attacks, to be sure. So we have to have capitulation. I want to discuss a little bit what capitulation is so that I can make a case that there are different forms of capitulation and that I'd like to see the more positive, constructive form. What is the magic of capitulation? Why is it so important? Why is that the thing that will turn things around? Think of, you have water in a bathtub, and you have some fish, and you're going to put the fish in the bathtub, and the fish, in order to live, need a water temperature of around 70 degrees. So if you throw the fish in and it's 70 degrees, everything's great. They're going to live. You're going to have good times. That's what we want. Today, we don't have 70 degree water. What we have today is we have half of a bathtub that has water of 110 degrees. These are the dogmatic passive investors. These are the people saying, buy now. These are the greatest bargains of the century. The suggestion is that not that we're at fair value, but that stocks are underpriced, that the prices that applied a year ago were reasonable. That's 110 degree temperature. The other half of the bathtub is 30 degrees. These are the people saying, I've lost too much. I don't trust stocks anymore. I don't believe any of it. I'm putting my money under the mattress. I'm getting out. I'm scared. That's the other half of the investing population today. So there's this big border, this big, piece of wood that's separating the two pools of water. So if you take an overall temperature of the bathtub, the overall temperature is 70 degrees. But the reality is the water is not 70 degrees anywhere. If you throw the fish in, they're all going to die. You throw the fish into the water that's 110, they're going to die. You throw the fish into the water that's 30 degrees, they're going to die. The reason in this example, it's the humans are the fish. And the reason we're going to die in either type of water is that both types of water, 30-degree water and 110-degree water, are they're both emotional water. And you can't succeed with your investing strategies if your strategies are pure emotion. How do we get to 70-degree water? It's not that hard. We've already got the right price. The P10 value is 15. We've done that. We've got the overall temperature correct. How do you get the water to be livable, to be a livable environment, when you've already got the temperature right, but both pools of water cause death? You remove the wood, the piece of wood separating the two pools of water. And the two pools of water mix. And then you stir. And then you've got 70-degree water. And then you throw the fish in, and they're all happy. And they've got 6.5% real returns every year for as long as the eye can see. We need to remove that block of wood. What we need to do is take away the barriers that are keeping the passive / emotional investors separated from the realistic, data-based, informed investors. We need to mix it all together. We don't want to eliminate the passive investors. We don't want to ban them from our communities any more than we should have banned the realistic investors, the rational investors. We want them all communicating, because the passive investors are going to keep the rational investors honest, and the rational investors are going to keep the passive investors honest. Then you've got a community that works. And when I speak of community, I'm speaking both of the retire early and indexing discussion board communities. That's a small micro community. And I'm talking about the much bigger community, the community of all people who care about investing. So the academics, they need to stop their defensiveness. The efficient market theory, there's academic research dating back to the 1980s showing that the efficient market theory does not stand up to scrutiny. But then there are academics ignoring that. Well, they need to stop ignoring it. They need to accept the challenge. If they truly believe in passive investing, they should say so. But they should do so honestly. The honest way to say it is to go to a forum with the researchers showing that the efficient market theory is nonsense, and discuss it. Make your case. See who's more persuasive. It's not going to be settled in one debate. It's not going to be settled in one day. These discussions have been going on since the beginning of time, since the first market was open for business. There's been a debate between rational investing and emotional investing. It's never going to end. But it got out of whack in the 1990s. Things got so pushed to the passive side that it became taboo to even mention what's happened in the past when we've gone to such valuation levels as we saw in the 90s. We've never gone to those valuation levels without suffering bone-crushing losses in the aftermath. And we can't say that. It's taboo. Say it on a discussion board on the internet. You'll be banned. Cannot be spoken. We've got this big wooden barrier between the sides. We need to take away the wooden barrier and allow free flow of discussion. And humans will sort it out. Humans will figure it out. Is everyone going to get it right? No. But everyone doesn't get it right in any field, do they? Everyone doesn't get it right in the field of medicine or in the field of baseball, or in the field of home decorating. So what? each person says their piece, and the entire community benefits. That's what we need to see in Investo World. Investo World is the grand exception. We have, you know, in our culture, we favor something called free speech, but not in Investo World. You can have free speech on all kinds of subjects, politics and baseball and science, but not on safe withdrawal rates. I'm going through this correspondence with Michael Kitsis, and I just received an email from him, and he said, I don't agree with you, Rob, that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are analytically invalid. I agree with a lot of what you say. I agree that not all those retirements will survive. I agree. I think the new school research is good. I'm going to do some new school research myself. I agree that valuations affect long-term returns, but I don't think we have to go so far as to say the old school studies are analytically invalid. I do not agree. Okay. You know, there have been people who have disagreed with Rob Bennett before. The world didn't come to an end. It happens. He doesn't agree. But what drives me crazy about it is he's going around, you know, Michael, and Michael's a great guy. He's helped us out a lot with his correspondence, because it sheds light. It sheds light. If you read it and take it, you know, and read it seriously. But he gives presentations, and he talks to people, and he points out the downside of the old school studies. That's to his great credit. You know, I applaud him, of course. But he says that he thinks the new school studies are at least just as good as the old school. I don't know if he thinks they're equally good or better. It's not clear. But he certainly thinks they're valuable. But in his speeches, he did talk about the new school studies at his blog. You know, he said about the retirement risk evaluator, it's a great calculator, a fantastic calculator. So that's the right spirit. But is he doing that in his speeches? Is he really doing, you know, work to publicize it? I don't think so. He's inching there. He's moving in that direction. He's taking tentative steps. But there's something that holds him back. And that's what I'm always trying to understand. What would hold somebody back? And I think it's human nature. I think we sense on some level that if we really start talking about the new school studies in detail, there's so much of an improvement over the old school that the old school will end up being rejected in total. And I think he has a great resistance to that for whatever, all kinds of reasons, I suppose. But anyway, you know, I don't want to get off on that. But the point is, what the reason, the magic of capitulation is that it breaks the fever. Passive investing. See, people think that the ideas they hear about investing are these neutral, scientifically discovered ideas. There's somebody up in the heavens somewhere that came up with these theories, and you know they were kind enough to bestow them on us. But that's not the way it works. The people who came up with these theories that tell us how to invest, that have been popular for 30 years now, they're humans like us. They're influenced by the same stuff we're influenced by. So all these academics, you don't think they have any of their money invested in the stock market? You don't think they read the papers? It's all an echo chamber. The academics put out research, which they I'm sure they originally thought was right. And then that causes the Wall Street to come up with some marketing slogans that get people all fired up. Timing doesn't work. Stocks for the long run. Buy and hold. People get fired up. They buy stocks. Buying the stocks causes some other people to get rich who already own stocks. Getting rich confirms in their mind that the theories are right. It becomes taboo for anyone to question it. The academics want tenure, so they don't want to do anything taboo. So they put out more studies saying the same thing as the other ones. Some studies come out showing it's all wrong. They get hushed up. Somebody finds out about it, talks about it on a discussion board. They're banned. Honest posting is banned. Do you see? It's an echo chamber. And the only thing that can break that echo chamber is those magic words, I was wrong. I feel that what Michael is saying to me is, why do you have to be critical of the old school? Can't you just promote the new school? And I'm all for being positive. But the problem is, the new school is implicitly a criticism of the old school. The safe withdrawal rate is a mathematical calculation. It can't be two different numbers. It can't be two wildly different numbers. So in any community where I report accurately what the historical data says about safe withdrawal rates, anyone who believes in the old school is going to be threatened by me doing that. And if they had any data to support their case, they would present it, but they don't have any. All they have is venom. That's all that's left to them. So anytime accurate reports are filed about what the historical data says on safe withdrawal rates, there's going to be abusive posting. There's no way around it. Until there's a general consensus that the old school studies are analytically invalid. And when that comes, there also has to be a general recognition that the passive investing model has failed. Because if the passive investing model got the retirement numbers wrong and caused millions of busted retirements, obviously this model doesn't work. It's not fit for the use of humans in the real world. So we have to go back and we have to change all the textbooks. And we have to change the investing advice we give to people. But that's a good thing. When I say that, I almost can hear on the other side of the computer screen people sort of hanging their heads and thinking, oh, we got it all wrong. Woe is us. What a terrible dark day. No, it's a wonderful bright day. We want to learn things we got wrong, because once we learn what we got wrong, that's the scientific process. That's how we move forward. You learn what you got wrong, and now you can get it right. Doors open. But that's capitulation. Capitulation is what allows that to happen. Capitulation is when the people who are defensive about having gotten things wrong give it up. So, this is why I say we want to have people give it up. We don't. There are different ways to get there. If it drags on, let's say this drags on another 7 years, we have little ups. There's always going to be ups mixed in with the drops. So we have some occasional climb in prices, but then we have a drop of twice that magnitude. And then another little climb and a drop of twice that magnitude. And over 7 years, we just grind down lower and lower and lower. More and more and more middle-class wealth disappears. And now it's not cotton candy disappearing. I've talked about how the $8 trillion we lost over the past 12 months was cotton candy. It never existed in the first place. All we did was we took money off the books that was a fiction to begin with. But that's not true now. If we go down another 50%, we're not losing cotton candy money. Instead of borrowing from future returns, which is what we did in the 1990s. We borrowed from future returns. What we're doing, if we go down from 15 down to 7 or 8 over the next 6, 7 years, we're funding, we're taking money out of our lives and pre-funding gains for future investors. It's the opposite of borrowing on a credit card. We're taking money out of circulation and putting it in the hands of future investors. Well, that's nice for the future investors, But frankly, after the hit we've taken over the past 8-9 years, we need it today. It's not responsible for us to be giving money to future investors, not with the shape the economy's in today. So we all should be working to stop these further price drops, to stop the pain. If we drag it out, there's this specter of depression in the air. If we suck out, I don't know how many more trillions in losses it would take to drop from 15 down to 7, but we're talking big money. If we go that route, I fear that depression becomes a possibility. We only have 2 experiences of this in the modern record. There's been 3 times when we went to La La Land prices. The first time was the early 1900s, and that was so long ago. We had bone-crushing losses, but that was so long ago, I don't know anything about what happened. You know, I'm not a historian, so I just don't know anything about it. And the world was so different that I'm not sure that, you know, it's interesting to know what happened, but I don't know that we can draw any grand conclusions from that experience. The second time was the Great Depression. We had, you know, the only time we've been at valuation levels even close to what we went to in the 1990s was when we had the years just before the Great Depression. The Great Depression was a response to those La La Land prices. There were other things involved, of course, and there are other things involved today. Everything doesn't turn on the stock market. But the stock market is a big driver of any economic bad time. Because, you know, when you take wealth out of people's pockets, it hurts the economy. It makes it impossible for businesses to survive or for new businesses to be started. So it's not the only factor, but it's a big factor, and it's the factor I focus on because that's what I write about, personal finance. So the second, you know, the first time we had bone-crushing losses, we don't know a whole lot about it. It's a long, long time ago, over 100 years ago. The second time was the Great Depression. The highest loss in the stock market at that time was 89%, 89% drop. The third time was the mid-1960s. We went to La La Land prices. And we did not have an 89% drop. I don't recall the number. I think it was about 67%, something like that. But we had very, very serious economic problems all through the 1970s. You know, a lot of people talk about Nixon. They talk about Nixon being removed from office as a result of Watergate. And, you know, I was paying attention. I was interested in journalism at the time, and I was following all that. And one of the big factors that a lot of people pointed to that caused Nixon to be removed had nothing to do with Watergate. It was that the economy went into a sustained recession. And a lot of the people politically who were supporting Nixon gave up their defense of him because people were so unhappy about the economic problems. People soured on Nixon. And, you know, Watergate was the direct cause, but the economy, the stock market crash that followed from the bull market of the 1960s is really what took Nixon out. And, of course, caused huge problems for Carter in the late 70s. We had inflation rates up to 20% at one time. There were a lot of people worried about the future of the country in the, you know, throughout the 1970s and early 80s. So, you know, are we going to see that again? Well, if you looked only at the historical record, you would say yes. You would say, well, there have been 3 times we tried, you know, going above 20 in the P/10 value. And each of those 3 times, we went back down to 7 or 8. So that's what's going to happen this time. Well, I don't think so. As I say, one of those 3 times is ancient history. And 2 times is certainly not enough to say it's a pattern that must be followed. It's certainly an indicator that it could happen. Certainly it's a live possibility, but I don't buy the idea that this is some, you know, this is deterministic, that we can't avoid this. But I do think we have to have some form of capitulation. The way the market works, now, this is what I think a lot of people miss. I always criticize the efficient market theory. But there's an important sense in which I take the efficient market theory more seriously than do its advocates. Because, you know, and that's a complicated question. I don't know if I can unpack that all here because, you know, I need to bring this to a close. But if you ask the average person what determines stock prices, a lot of people seem to think that stock prices are just random. Things sort of happen and stock prices pop up. And I don't believe that at all. I believe stock prices ultimately have to reflect the productivity of the economy. Stock prices come from somewhere. They're not random numbers. The patterns by which they play out, those are random numbers. The patterns are unknowable. But the ultimate price, the very distant long-term price, is not a random number. And so what I believe is the efficient market theory people were right about something important, but they were wrong about something important. They were right that stock market prices in the long run, ultimately, in the very distant long run, reflect the economic realities. So go 30 years out, and I'm in total agreement with the efficient market theory, the passive investing people. Total agreement if you go 30 years out. But the mistake they make is in thinking that the market is efficient instantly. That's where they're so wrong, so tragically, horribly wrong. The market's efficient if you go 30 years out, but it's wildly inefficient 5 years out. And it's somewhat inefficient, somewhat efficient 10 years out. And it gets more efficient over time. But what matters to the middle class investor is what happens at 5 years and 10 years and 15 years. And in those years, there's a mix of efficiency and inefficiency. And the only way you can know how to invest during those mix years is to know what the starting price was. Because there's going to be this pull. It's like a giant magnet pulling prices towards efficiency. And if you start out at efficiency, that's fine. You're going to end up at efficiency. You start out at efficiency. That's a real return of 6.5%. You're doing great. But if you start out with prices in La La Land, that giant magnet is going to crush you. And in January of 2000, we were at a P10 value of 44. Fair value is 14. Well, there ain't no easy way from 44 to 14. You're going to be crushed. If you buy stocks at those prices, you're going to be crushed. I see no way around it. So, we've suffered the crushing we have to suffer. See, that's over. We're now at fair value. So the magnet is turned off. It's not a problem. The problem today is that it's not... What we've seen in history is that even when the magnet is turned off, prices continue to go down. But that's not because of the economic realities. That's because of investor emotion. And what's happening is, you know, it's like a love affair. You meet someone, you become infatuated, and then they dump you. And you don't go back to feeling the way you felt the day before you met them. You go into total misery because you were living in this fantasy world and it's been destroyed. And passive investing encourages fantasy worlds. And so we now have millions of people living in a fantasy world thinking that stocks are on sale today, that there's the bargain of the century, all this gibberish. And so long as they're living in a fantasy, they are subject to being crushed. And so long as there are new investors being crushed, prices are going to keep going down. The only way out is information, accurate, reasonable information, non-emotional information, objective information, historical data. We need to permit discussion of rational investing strategies so that investors can become informed of the realities. And then the panic dissipates. And then there's no need for a drop down to 8. So what I think is needed is the big problem I hear when I talk to investors about the rational model is they say, Rob, that all makes sense. What you're saying makes sense. But that's not what the experts are telling me. And Rob, I have to go with the experts. I have to go with the experts. I think we need the experts. The experts know there's been studies out since the 1980s showing that the efficient market theory does not stand up to scrutiny. So the experts either know that or they certainly have access to the information. They've been ignoring it. They've been blocking it out. They've been tuning it out. They need to tune it in. We need to get a group of 20 experts. John Bogle, Bill Bernstein, Michael Kitsis, Jonathan Clements, Scott Burns, Robert Shiller, John Walter Russell, Ed Easterling, John Malden, Andrew Smithers, Rob Arnott, Cliff S. Ness. We need 20 of these people on a stage, and we need the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal in attendance, and we need a statement. And it doesn't have to be long, but it has to have those words in it. Either the words, I was wrong, that would be my preference, or even if the language was, I'm not sure, I think that would do it. John Bogle saying, I'm not sure about passive investing anymore. I thought it was a good idea. I see the human misery it's caused. I look at my discussion board and these people don't understand the basics of investing. They're just running around like chickens with their heads off. And I it's my philosophy that caused this. There's something wrong here. And I see that Robert Shiller's book is directly contrary to what I say, and I see the historical data doesn't back it up, and I look at my own speeches and I see these huge contradictions. And people have pointed this out to me. My friends in my discussion board community have pointed it out, and I don't know the answer. I can't explain these contradictions. So I've come to the conclusion that while I have tried to study investing for a long time, and I like to think I've done some good. Many people have told me I have. Even people who have criticized my advocacy of passive investing have said I've done good things. I started the indexing revolution. Revolutionized middle-class investing. And I hope we're going to find some good in what I've done. But I have come to believe that the dogmatism that has become characteristic of passive investing in recent decades is a horrible, horrible mistake. And I ask on bended knee that anyone who advocates my ideas ditches this dogmatism, ditches this fantastical idea that the passive investing model is science. I never meant to say this was science. It's an idea. I'm just a struggling human like all the others and doing the best I can to understand investing. I'm not a scientist. These aren't scientifically proven ideas. They're just ideas. They're being tested in the marketplace. And they seem to be working for a few years. Now, they don't seem to be working for 10 years. Let's discuss. Let's find out what the good is in them, and let's find out what the bad is in them. That's my dream. He's not going to make that speech this week or this month. But I hope that he makes it. And if he makes it, we have the information today available. And we have the communications technology to spread that information, to teach people a far better way to invest. We can turn it around. We have it in our power. That's capitulation. That's capitulation. Saying the words, I was wrong, that's capitulation. It works that same magic as dropping to a P10 level of 8 without us having to suffer the economic devastation. The economic devastation is optional. That's one way to get there, but it's not the only way. In my belief, this is all Rob Bennett's take on how investing works. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care. We'll be right back.